Well, welcome back to the Word for Life radio ministry of the Brookside Baptist Church. I'm Pastor Greg Huffman, counseling pastor and senior citizens pastor at Brookside. And it's often our joy to be able to have someone in the studio with whom we can fellowship and just kind of pick their brains. And obviously this morning is no exception. In the studio is Dr. Jim Benny. I just referred to him as Jim because we've known each other since we were three.
Oh, that's a long time.
And what a blessing it is to have you in town, Jim. And obviously, the ministry that God has given you has been very unique. You started out as a youth pastor or a pastor?
No, I started out as a youth pastor years ago.
Okay. And then went into the ministry as far as a pastor is concerned.
Right.
But during that time, you began to see the pressures that pastors were going through.
Right.
Tell us how God began to direct you in that area.
Well, I was the president of what's called the Fundamental Baptist Fellowship of Michigan, not related to the larger national organization.
Okay.
For about 8 years, and we had a number of churches, a number of pastors in our fellowship, about 60 in number.
Mm-hmm.
And part of my role as a president would be if they had trouble either in their marriage or the church needed arbitration or mediation or something like that, I would go to their aid. And I began to realize that pastors have struggles.
Right.
And also noticed there weren't a lot of places they can go.
Sure.
It came to a head when a friend of mine, a dear pastor friend, very sensitive man, actually had been a roustabout, kind of a two-fisted barroom brawler, heavy drinker, got saved, came to the Lord. And he eventually became a pastor and had a heart for kids, especially kids being brought up the way he was on the other side of the track.
Sure.
Developed a bus ministry in his church in Michigan. And one day they had a problem with the bus, a weak spot in the floor. They didn't have time to fix it before Sunday, and they made it faithful decision to go ahead and use it and tape it off and put warning signs up and so forth.
Okay.
So they covered this weak place with the cardboard. They taped it off. But one little boy decided to push the envelope. He vaulted over the back of the seat. His foot went through the cardboard, wedged in the dual tires, and it pulled him under and crushed him instantly. The pastor came on the scene, and of course he blamed himself for that decision, but he saw the body, and it just broke him. That evening, I was asked to preach because he could not. It was like a funeral, but nobody knew what to do, so they sent him to a Christian psychiatric hospital, which we thought would be fine if it was Christian, but it turned out they filled him with drugs and psychotherapy.
Oh, boy.
He never recovered. That's when God burden me that there needs to be somewhere where people can go to get biblical help.
Right. Because there's a big difference between Christian counseling and biblical counseling.
Oh, my, yes. The difference is vast. I'm a biblical counselor like yourself. Well, I am a Christian and a counselor.
Right, right.
But most Christian counseling is both eclectic and integrated. Eclectic in that they choose from any number of the 250 systems out there, 250 to 450, depending on who you read, and integrated in that they take from these numerous systems of psychotherapy and they integrate it into the scripture to create what they think is a superior system, superior to psychotherapy alone or the Bible alone. The goal being to Christianized psychology, the result being to psychologize Christianity.
Sure, sure.
The Bible avoids that. Biblical counseling stays in the Bible, uses the Bible, and that becomes the basis of the counseling.
Because of the sufficiency of scriptures.
Right.
So if it's not a medical issue, it's a spiritual issue.
Yes. I agree with J. Adams that all problems have their root in sin, sickness, or Satan, or a combination of the three. But the sickness is not our field. Unfortunately, that field has gone afield in the sense that they're calling disease, they're aiding and abetting, in my view, some of the disease mongering that wants to call behavior problems a disease of some kind,
sure,
a behavioral disorder, or when in fact it could be a spiritual issue.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a provable, organic, empirically provable disease, such as hypoglycemia, diabetes, low blood sugar, or whatever that affects the mind, I think that deserves attention.
Right, exactly. So as you began to get a burden then in that area, you're still pastoring, and did you try to start a ministry while you were still pastoring?
No. I was accused of pastoring the pastors more than I pastored my church in a offhanded way.
Humorous comments.
Right.
You hoped they were humorous.
Yes.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. You know, like the same comment, pastors, is Sunday the only day you work?
Oh, boy.
No, I did not. I did not.
Mm-hmm.
But I was involved in it, and the burden kept growing. So it finally came to a head, and I said, well, Lord, I believe this is the time. And, Greg, I believe you got to have a marriage between God's direction and God's timing before the will of God is complete.
Exactly.
We have a tendency to equate the two. Particularly immaturity equates the two. But God's timing was very important in that. So it took about 5 years, 5 to 6 years before it came to fruition.
Okay. Jim, we've got a lot of people who are members of a church who are listening to our broadcast this morning. What would you encourage them to be doing or thinking concerning the specific needs of their pastor, pastor's wife, or pastors if they have a multiple church staff?
Well, one thing that pastors and wives both need is a friend, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And there's a philosophy out there that basically says that a pastor cannot have a friend in the church. And usually the objections are, well, it will make people jealous, it will show favoritism, you could be unduly influenced. But most of the objections are based on fear. I think a lot of pastors and a lot of churches have the view that the pastor should be, how should we say, as one counselee came to her therapist on the street and asked her to join her for coffee, she said, I can't do that. I'm your therapist, not your friend. All right. So I fear that because of this belief that pastors' wives complain about loneliness, you know, they don't have a friend, and even pastors in the church, I have to avoid having friends. Well, Jesus said to the disciples at one point, I have called you servants, but henceforth I call you friends.
Right.
And he had his inner circle, Peter, James, and John. He had his intimate friend, John. He had Mary and Martha and Lazarus. And he had people that he was friends with, and it never compromised his leadership. So I would say to the church people, let your pastor and wife have friends. Now, I think there's some guidelines that should go along with that. I think you need to be careful, but I have had a pastorate where I had a friend, a deacon, who ministered to me.
Sure.
And he helped me tremendously. He was a godly man, and I don't think I'd have made it without him. So I think that's a key area because, you know, you get to the point, pastors get to the point where they have no friends at all, and they, and who do they talk to?
Right.
So they keep it to themselves, and after a while, well, something blows, and everybody said, where'd that come from? We never saw that coming.
But it's been festering for quite some time.
Yes.
And you don't feel like you can necessarily talk to other pastors in town because many times there is jealousy among the other pastors, and they're just waiting to find out something about you and your ministry. So when somebody from your church visits their church, they can say, well, we're so glad you're with us. Now, Brother So-and-so is a good guy, but...
I'm sorry, Greg. I'm thinking about the story of the three guys in the rowboat, you know, who were talking talking about their private sins. And one of them says, well, I can't help but drink. And I mean, they were going to have a transparency session, you know.
Right.
And so one of them says, I can't help it but drink. And another says, I can't help. I'd use too much tobacco. And then the last one says, well, my big problem is gossip, and I can hardly wait to get home.
See, and we laugh about that, but that is sadly true.
There's a lot of truth to it.
Yeah. And so many times I have just seen so many pastors that are exactly like you've described, lonely, don't know where to turn. And if they have been trained, like you and I were, not to have a friend in the church, then it just becomes internalized. And then sometimes they even try to share it with their wives. And that can either be very depressing for the wife, or she may feel like, look, I pumped you up yesterday. I can't pump you up every day, you know. And so sometimes they just have nowhere to turn. But if they could have a good godly friend, you know, in the church that could minister to them and pray for them, it's such a blessing to have people to say, Pastor, how can I pray for you? And it's not just a question that they're asking, probing into your life to see what they can learn. They literally do pray for you and come back and say, Pastor, I've been praying about this situation. Is there any change? Are things any better? Jim, when you've got a church member that says something like that, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that just lifts your spirit. I'll never forget a deacon that came to my car window as Ruth and I were leaving on a Sunday night after church, and we were going to be gone for a week vacation. And this is back in the days where everybody had cassette tapes, you know. And so I rolled my window down, and he handed me a cassette tape, and he said, Pastor, I want you to have a great vacation. But on your way to the vacation, I want you and Ruth to listen to this tape. And I said, oh, is it it's some pretty music? He said, no. I said, well, what is, he said, we just need to listen to the tape. You know, at that point, it's got my curiosity up. I said, it's a message, isn't it? He said, well, I said, all right. All right, I need to listen to this. Now, that's not what I wanted to do on a vacation.
Right.
But he said, okay, it's a tape where a pastor's speaking, and he's speaking to a bunch of pastors, and it's entitled Choosing to Cheat. And I said, what? He said, the whole philosophy is we have so many pressures in our lives that somewhere along the line we're going to cheat somebody when it comes to the time that we spend with them. And he said, the most important thing is to learn not to cheat your wife or cheat your family. If you have to choose to cheat, you know, don't spend as much time working out at the gym, or don't spend as much time making all those sales calls, but don't choose to cheat your wife and your kids. And I'll tell you what, we listened to that tape, and we both sat there in the car crying. And I looked at Ruth, and I said, well, honey, how am I doing? And she said, I'm glad we listened to the tape. And that told me. Now, see, that's a friend, isn't it? And friends, our time has come to an end, but we will continue our conversation. But we just want you to be a friend to your pastor and his wife. May God bless you as you seek to do that on a consistent basis.